Big thanks to Audible for supporting Current Geek. For a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial, go to audible.com/currentgeek.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world... You're making me laugh, and that means I'm going to cough. Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson, still recovering, and Tom Merritt, who's basically recovered. How you doing, Tom?
Almost there. I'm going to be using my mute button a little bit for this stupid cough that's like across the continent. People in New York that I know have it. Mm-hmm. People in San Francisco, you in Salt Lake. So crazy, but we are here. We're going to do Current Geek because we won't miss this guest again because of illness. We refuse.
That's right. We have on the line with us a very special guest, a friend of the program, friend of the network, Abby Wessels, podcaster and LGBT advocate and host of the award-winning podcast, Diary of a Trans Woman. Welcome to the show, Abby.
Hello.
What happened last time? I think somebody was sick then and you didn't get to come on then. That sucked.
I got sick real early on, and then you two guys decided to get sick while I was scheduled to be on the show. So. Yeah,
well, it's just the way our world collides. But it's good having you here. I'm so happy to finally have done it. And you were saying before the show, somebody there or in your neck of the woods was saying that this was upgraded to epidemic status.
Yeah, my doctor. I don't know if it's the same thing still going around, but what was going around about a month ago was epidemic level.
That's crazy.
Wow.
That means lots and lots of people, I guess. I don't actually know the definition of epidemic now that I think about it. But it's something
I think
like
it's
that.
Lots and lots of people, just not doesn't have to be lots and lots of deaths.
Oh, good. Well, I would
below
like
below pandemic then.
Yeah, I heard today. This is sad news. I hope it's not comes to anything more than just hopefully he's okay. But Stan Lee, who was scheduled to be here in Salt Lake City for FanX this weekend, it was going to be his last con appearance because he's going to stop doing those. We were like thrilled to be the place Stan Lee's going to have his final moment in the con world, and he's sick and his doctor won't let him go. So I hope this isn't that, and I hope he's okay. Is all I want to say about that.
Okay, this is going to tell you a little bit about Google. I search epidemic right up at the top, a widespread occurrence of an infectious disease in a community at a particular time. So I'm like, okay, what's a pandemic? Pandemic is a cooperative board game designed by Matt Leacock.
Ah, right. Got it. Okay, now it's clear. Everything makes sense. Let's do the headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering. As do many others in high public office.
All right, Tom, despite illness, there were things that happened this week. We should talk about them. What do you got?
Yeah, speaking of board games, Wizards of the Coast and Twitch-owned Curse are building an app called D&D Beyond for dungeon masters to be able to track game progress if they just don't want to use pen and paper anymore. Mm. The app for PCs and mobile devices would support 5th edition rules and include a rules compendium, a character builder, interactive character sheets. D&D Beyond is expected to arrive in beta this summer, and you can sign up if you're interested in trying it at dndbeyond.com.
So Dan Patrice, friend of the program and otherwise guest, he's been a guest on the show before, has talked about this. He's in the alpha, I think, or has had some test access to it. And of all the people I know who are into the tabletop scene, I've never seen him as excited about this than I have anything else he's ever done. So apparently this is the bee's knees and people are totally stoked about it. So can't wait to see what happens. Finally, you can have a DM who won't or shouldn't potentially get mad at his players for looking at their phones in the middle of a game because now they're required to do it.
Because now the Dungeon Master will also be looking at his phone.
That's right. Exactly. Abby, excited about this new way to play or extend the game?
Yeah, I've played a few rounds in college with my then partner, and that partnership faded and so did the group. So I wasn't able to flush the character out as much as I want, but I've got a character in my mind that I really want to play. I've just never had the group to play with. So anytime a tool comes out that makes it easier for people to get together and have fun with this, I'm all for it.
Yeah, me as well. I'm pretty stoked. I hope this means that, let's see, you gave us a date. When's this thing out in beta? Soon.
It's coming in the summer.
Summer.
Beta in the summer.
So
yeah,
maybe
so give us an exact date. Yeah,
maybe by this fall people can start using it. But
have you signed up?
I haven't, and I should, and maybe I will here at the end of the show. But here's the broader question. Do you think that this will finally, I mean, I've always felt like D&D is the most mainstream of the everyone sitting around a table playing a role-playing game. Obviously, yeah. You think of D&D as the standard thing. But I won't say it ever really truly became a mainstream phenomenon. When we were kids, it was for me and you after school on a Friday night with Cheetos and, you know, whatever. Like, it was a very specific kind of group you were playing with. It felt like this wasn't mainstream. This wasn't playing Monopoly or something. This was something smaller, more unique. And we all knew it was something special, but I don't think the rest of the world so much knew.
It was widespread in scope, but not widespread in any particular region. It's the kind of thing, it's hard to tell in this day of the internet where people can take part in stuff from far away, what this would have been like had it launched then. Because I know there were a smattering of people in Greenville who played it, but not a lot. But the fact that there were anybody in Greenville who played it, a town of 5,300 people, you know, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Now, is this the kind of thing where instead of bringing books and your giant bag of dice to the physical table and playing, you can actually bring your phone? Or could I play a campaign with you and Tom, Scott?
Well, the idea, this is my understanding of the way this thing's supposed to work. You're supposed to be able to do a couple of things here. Because I've already, by the way, there's already a bunch of, and we're going to get emails about this, so I may as well say it now. There's a bunch of third-party things that already exist on the internet. Some of it's like open source. Some of it's just straight up good practices for how to use Skype and a piece of paper. So a lot of people are already kind of doing a lot of these things. But having something official come from these guys and having it endorsed and being able to get in there and actually do your character tracking and stuff in a way that seems like it's more than just some ramshackle hacked together thing, I think is the big deal here. But
let's not damn people who worked hard to make good software and say it's all ramshackle. But they couldn't legally include the compendium rules
right. That's maybe the biggest key. Yeah.
And they couldn't have Wizards of the Coast and, you know, Twitch/Curse engineers behind it. So there's some good stuff out there, but it was always, you know, it's not necessarily ramshackle, but always something that was a little bit of work around.
Yeah, I shouldn't besmirch them. There's always some kludge when you're trying to do it on your own. You're trying to work around the rules and whatever. But having something officially sanctioned like this is pretty cool. I hope it means at some point full bestiary and stuff for all the characters in the world, or the NPCs and creatures and stuff you'd fight. The ability to make up a lot of that stuff on your own. Like, there's a lot of potential here. And I guess what I'm saying is maybe this is the point where we see it really branch out and become a thing that is way more accessible by a lot more people who don't still have it in their head. It's this extremely nerdy activity that only college kids play on the weekend. So we'll see. We shall see.
And those of you who still use pen and paper can lord it over everyone else, that you're like, you know, doing it the old fashioned way. I don't use these newfangled apps.
That's right. You can have a game. You can put vinyl records on in the background. You can wear glasses with no lenses in them, and you can play this game. It's perfect. You're all set.
A red, white, and blue cap, just like in Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm. Make fondue. I don't know why fondue.
All right. They make fondue in Stranger Things?
I don't know, but all I could think of was fondue for some reason. I think it's because being a young kid, late.
Definitely a fondue vibe going on. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if there's any fondue in there.
Stranger Things is like fourth grade. I don't think I knew how to make fondue. I don't think I knew what fondue was in fourth grade.
No, but I guarantee you that what's-her-faces, Winona Ryder's character, had some fondue parties.
Guarantee. At the very least, she had fondue pots in the cupboard. There's no way she hadn't.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's be honest.
Tupperware.
The Natural Environmental Research Council may have subverted the democratic wishes of its audience back when it named their polar research ship after Sir David Attenborough instead of respecting the popular vote of Bodie McBoatface. Hmm. But they have bestowed that name upon an autonomous underwater vehicle, or AUV, which is set to travel 6,000 meters under the ice, collect and transmit data. Bodie McBoatface, the AUV, will head out on its first mission aboard the British Antarctic Survey research ship James Clark Ross today, March 17th.
Where no one will see it. Yeah. No one will ever see that it's actually called. It's not actually called Bodie McBoatface. They just are saying that because no one's going to prove them wrong, because no one's going to go under the water in Antarctica.
I beg to differ, Abby. There's a picture that has the words Bodie McBoatface painted on it. How can you dispute that?
I think they actually refer to them in official scientist channels as Bodie McBoatface.
I doubt it.
I bet they do.
Some kind of code name that they just. I'm not going to call this Bodie McBoatface. This is
You know what? There's a couple of the scientists who insist on calling it Bodie McBoatface every time.
As they should.
A couple of others that refuse and like dance around it.
Yeah,
you're absolutely.
I think it's the kind of thing they should embrace, and I'm happy that in some small way that sounds like they have. But you know, there's some people who are genuinely ticked that they didn't go with the original vote, and saw it as a slight against the democratic process of naming water vehicles. But I was not shocked when they decided not to do that. I thought, you know, this is a big project worth millions of pounds, therefore dollars. Like, let's not exactly go with what the internet tells you to do. So I wasn't that surprised, but, you know, this is throwing us a bone. It's fine. If it's a little, you know, troller looking thing that goes down there and finds stuff, that's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. I wasn't mad either. I was definitely disappointed, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I loved it. Bodie McBoatface is a great name. In fact, we should all just have... You know, we should all have or adopt children in this world and name them Bodie McBoatface just to stand, to make a stand. There you go.
I mean, too, like, naming it Bodie McBoatface doesn't mean that this metal boat is now made out of paper and it's not going to do what it's supposed to do.
True.
Just to,
But think of all those old, like, all right, now I'm going to get in trouble. But let's just say there's like a 72-year-old seafaring scientist who's been doing this for, you know, decades, and he's asked to pilot a ship called Bodie
McBoatface. Amanda McDermott, and I am a serious sea scientist.
I love that he's a pirate too. That's great. But you know what I mean, like, he's not going to stand for this. This isn't the way he does things. So
I refuse to call this AUV.
Gotten on and voted.
Yeah.
Voted.
Yeah, out. It got voted and voted. That's true.
Yeah, I do like the idea of a whole generation of adopted children named Bodie McBoatface.
I'm in. Yeah, why not? We got, you know, there's a lot out there. They need families and they need names.
Shall we move on to something less controversial? The
sure.
CIA. At South by Southwest, David Klopper, the senior collection analyst for the CIA, talked about how he creates card games and board games to train CIA staff. Collection is Klopper's first game and had a team of analysts working together to solve international crises against a ticking clock. His second title, Collection Deck, because he's CIA, this is how they name things.
Yeah.
It's a Pokemon-like card game in which each card represents either an intelligence collection strategy or a hurdle like red tape or bureaucracy. And he's got a bunch of other examples too.
Thus, immediately humanizing the entire organization in one fell swoop. And some would I don't know, would say that this is a purposeful thing for them to sort of humanize the face of the CIA at an event like South by Southwest. But I personally freaking love it. I think it's great. These guys are nerds like us. Why wouldn't he make some sort of board game? And the fact that he's sharing it like this is totally cool.
Well, did he talk about it or did he actually bring it and have people play it?
Now, that's a good question.
I would love to play it.
Yeah,
yeah, that's classified.
You're not supposed to make me laugh.
No, you know what? Actually, I'm pretty sure that he is a game designer as well, like a freelance game designer. So there are games that he's designing. There's probably very good reasons why there's certain things in the actual game that you couldn't give to the general public, but you're going to get versions of this sanitized for public consumption, it sounds like.
Gotcha. So he's like, he has a day job and then he does this, Abby. That's what it sounds like to me.
I find it weird that a bunch of suits at the CIA are sitting in a meeting going, we should hire a game designer.
Yeah.
To train our people. And not someone who is just like, hey, I'm on the job. Hey, you know what? I kind of like card games. Let me just make this.
Yeah, I'm into this.
Yeah, I had to go out and search for someone to make the CIA card game.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe David Klopper is that person that you're talking about. Maybe he was working at the CIA and was like, guys, you know, card games are a really good way of training people. Let's just do this.
Yeah.
He got in trouble playing Pokemon Go and like, no, it's
research.
I'm playtesting.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Hey, back in 2009, the Library of Congress commissioned a research report on the degradation of CD-ROMs. The study found that keeping disks dry and cool does reduce error rates, but it doesn't eliminate them. Disks were made with such a wide range of materials that they need to do some more research before they pin down which disks have the better life expectancy. But in general, 10% of the disks in their study failed at an estimated life of less than 25 years. And 23 disks, about 16%, had insufficient increase in errors during the test. So essentially, as far as they know, they will last a long time.
So I have a a ton of old discs that I used to think, oh, these are never going to, I mean, I knew about the degradation.
Right, Scott, you're muted.
No, so I shouldn't
I'm not
be
sure
muted.
Why, that, I know, I'm not sure why that,
that
would
should
be.
But, that shouldn't happen. Hold on.
And
show
I can tell you're
there
making
we go.
A very
now
salient
talking.
Point there.
Hold on. Let me try that again. Unmute. Okay, that's weird. That shouldn't have happened. Don't know why that happened. Weird. sorry. What was I saying? Oh, I, okay.
We don't know.
So this used to scare me. Because I used to hear this and go, oh, no, my discs, because I have a ton of discs for backup and stuff that I still have. But then I thought, well, we're talking about degradation of, like, more than a decade. Like, it's not going to be forever. I'll deal with that some other time. I don't have to worry about it now. And it occurs to me as you're reading this, holy crap, I have some discs that have important stuff on it that is over 10 years old now, just waiting to go bad. So I've got to, like, get on the stick. What do people have to do? Just hurry up and
that
get it
off?
That
copy of Microsoft Encarta is just about 25 years old now, Scott.
True. So. But I've got, like, comics from 2003, 4, and 5 that I don't have any other... I have no other hard disk or cloud-based backups of these particular files, these old PSD files I created way back in the day that I think I'm going to want one day. So I'm a little freaked out now. I mean, I guess you'll find out when you're on the disc if everything's okay or not. But I'm going to recommend. I think it's just easy to see the last decade and a half go by really fast. Like, none of us sort of really saw it coming as quick as it did. And now it's gone. And we still think of discs as being kind of a newish technology. A lot of us do. I do. I don't want to speak for everybody. But because I think of them that way. I know they're like, not what? New. I know they're not new. But in my head, it's not old. It's not necessarily like a cassette tape or a... I don't know, some old, you know, reel to reel or some other weird storage method, but it's new enough for me just to put it out of my head and I haven't thought about it. So this is like my dad and slides in the 90s, right? Like his slides went from the hot thing in 1979 through 84 to being completely obsolete by the mid 90s. And he was like, oh no, what do I freaking do? And he actually never did anything. I have all the slides over there still. I got to do something with those because they're dying too slowly. So
what
anyway,
do first, though?
Oh, say what?
Use of the slides. What goes first, though?
Oh my gosh! Maybe I can do them both at the same time. I can multitask that business. Or there's probably services for both, right? Yeah. Send a bunch of discs somewhere. Say, put these on my, I don't know, my tab. Yeah. I don't know how it works. But anyway,
so what's the recommended solution for this? What's does a USB drive, is that going to last a lot longer than a CD or? What's the
is it Tom, would you say it's just keep moving it from format to format until you're just current all the time?
Honestly, that's kind of what I've done. Because over the years I have taken all of the floppy disks I had and I transferred them to a folder on my AMD 3840 46 no I think it was actually a 120 megahertz processor, an AMD 120 megahertz processor based machine back in like 1999. And then from there, that folder has been copied to every new machine until, you know, I started using CrashPlan and Dropbox, and that folder is now there. And it's just part of a system of backing up now that I'm always keeping fresh backups, both local and remote. And it's such a tiny, tiny little bit of data. Because they were floppy disks, that it stays in there. Now, a better solution if you're like, hey, I've got stacks and stacks and stacks of CDs with video and high resolution images, that becomes a different matter because you do want to put them in some kind of cold storage instead of having to pay to store them on a remote server somewhere necessarily. But what that cold storage is, I mean, CDs aren't bad, but you do have to remind yourself to transfer them to a new medium every so often to make sure they don't degrade.
Yeah, because even a new CD, it's great and all, if even it was made yesterday, but you still got this 25-year, you know, lifespan. My snake will die before my CDs die if I buy a CD today. That's a weird thing to say. I have a snake who will live to 25. Anyway, the point is, I need to move all my stuff. I need to go Tom's method of one folder. It fits everything. My problem is I've got files from the early part of the aughts that are 300 to 600 megabytes in size, art files, and they're kind of priceless in the sense that they'd have to be completely recreated if I needed them. I think maybe some of that tomorrow too. I got to do some of that stuff.
There also are some online cloud cold storage that are fairly cheap, where they say they basically just charge you to access the data and you pay almost nothing to store it. So that's another solution to go after if it's stuff like, I don't need to look at it very often. I just need to know it's safe.
Does it start? Are we getting to that stage? It feels like almost like a DTNS topic, but are we getting to that stage where we having all this cloud data and we're trusting companies to do stuff, we're giving them money to do it, but we're trusting them to do things that we used to feel pretty good about because we'd put it on a shelf or we'd stick it in a box or put it in a safe in case there was a fire or whatever. But now we're kind of trusting them. And many of us like you and I are doing local backups and cloud backups, which I think is really smart. But at some point it starts to feel like you have no control over anything. Like, I don't feel like I have much control over my data. Really? I mean, all it would take is a massive collapse of the internet or one of those companies to lose their minds or, you know, just some horrible catastrophic server issue or something. Like, I know this stuff takes care of itself over time, but I always feel like my data is just sort of ready to die and go away at any time because none of it's physical. None of it's, you know, in essence, none of it's real. It's real, but it's not real in a physical sense.
I think that there's going to be a resurgence of having physical data as soon as one of those big companies loses a crap ton of data, not like personal info, but if like Google Drive crashed and you lost all your files or Dropbox, something goes down and just ruins everything. There's going to be a big resurgence into having physical data. And maybe that'll be the hipster act of the next few decades or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I use a Chromebook for the majority of my work that isn't podcasting. I have this with me all the time. And all of that is cloud storage. And maybe it's a generational thing, but I was very, very young when I stopped caring about having a Case Logic binder full of 20,000 CDs having all my music on it. Now, I don't even own the music I listen to. I listen to it on Spotify, and that works just as fine.
Yeah.
Just as well.
No, that's a good point. And I'm the same way with most of that stuff. In fact, like things that I want now to consume, movies or video games or music, I do not want a disc. No, thank you. Unless it's a $5 deal on Amazon for a Blu-ray that I wouldn't get otherwise. Forget about it. I'm not interested. I don't want a clutter. I don't want extra discs. I don't want any of that stuff. I just want digital files. And that was easy to get over for some reason for me. That was not a problem. I don't mind renting my entertainment world. Yeah. But it's things I create that I worry about. That's the main thing. Stuff I've made. Podcast files and everything else. It's just, bleh.
Although, another way of looking at it, where's all your money?
Yeah.
Is it on your shelf?
It's a good point.
Please tell me I'm coming over to your house right now. No, but the point being, like, you keep your money in remote storage, right? You keep it in the cloud. Most people, you have a little bit, obviously, on you, but most people keep money in banks. Granted, money is more important than data by a little bit. So and has a longer history. So we have better regulatory mechanisms, but maybe that's the solution is we need to make sure that we start treating data with almost that amount of respect. Mm. And the fact that we have these big companies that, you know, Google and Amazon are not likely to go out of business anytime soon. Mm. And they have very good redundancy. Even if Amazon has an outage like it did recently, it doesn't lose data.
Right.
So keep going down that road.
Yeah, I think you actually answered it. That's the answer. Is the future is a future where data is seen less as an ancillary part of our lives and more of a really important one like money. Because you're right. I've been using money as a cloud service since I was a kid, and there was no such thing as cloud computing then. But it was essentially, it was in a bank someplace, had no control over it. It was checks going straight to a bank. There was never any money in anyone's hands. Like, and that's somehow this, you know, this normal thing. And I guess people do get paranoid and then stuff their mattresses with cash. But
well, it's going to be interesting to see how, like, you go into a bank and they've got just file cabinets full of money with no locks on or whatever. You're not going to leave your money in there, but you go and you see a big fancy safe that they store all the money in. They're going to store their money in there. Yeah. How do you know? Like, it's very, very hard to know. Okay. This cloud service is very secure. This cloud service isn't very secure because I read all the facts and figures and I know all this stuff. The general public doesn't know that much about how their money is being secured online. Mm-hmm. And so demonstrating or showing people that, yes, we are better than this company because we do this, this, and this is going to be very, very hard to impart onto the general public.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be weird.
The Federal Data Insurance Corporation.
Start stuffing your floppies in your mattress is all I'm saying. That's how
I'm actually glad that you had that reaction, Scott. It was about 50% that I thought maybe you'd react by saying, that's right, I need to move all my money into my mattress now.
Yeah, no, I'm all about. I mean, yeah, it's usually a mindset thing. It's like Bitcoin or anything else. It's usually just like there's a new way of thinking about it. And it just takes you a while to come around to it. What I don't want to do is be like, you know, somebody's grandpa in my 70s going, I don't trust a bank. Like, maybe there's times you shouldn't trust banks. And I realize the history of bank regulation is littered with victims, people who had to, you know, take it hard so that,
yeah,
so that they could fix it, or we could get into a place where that wouldn't happen again. And I feel like we maybe haven't quite done that with our data yet. Right. Yeah. Like, we're still Wild West a little bit, keeping gold in the back room. But I think we'll get there. And the question is whether or not that will be a bumpy road or a smooth one. So we'll see.
The great data depression.
Yeah.
The data run.
The DD.
Have to happen. Yeah. All right. Man, we had some geeky stuff in the subreddit today. Thank you, guys. The Event Horizon Telescope, or EHT, is adding the Atacama Large Millimeter Array, the world's most powerful radio telescope, and a second telescope at the South Pole to its network of radio telescope observatories that make up 9 telescopes now in various points across the planet. The EHT is then synchronized with atomic clocks and pointed directly at the center of our galaxy, where astronomers expect to find a black hole when they begin testing, anyway, of observations in April. We might not see the black hole for a couple of years, depends on how it goes. But we're turning the entire planet into a telescope in order to find a black hole.
That's so cool. I mean, is it like stitching together these images? Is it? It's probably not that simple, obviously, but it's giving us more angles, obviously, right? Or broader.
Yeah, I mean, think of it this way. The Gizmodo article actually is really, really good if you want to understand it. But it's the way an optical telescope works, right, is all the light rays come in and the lenses focus them into a single image, right?
Yeah.
What this one's doing is mathematically doing that with radio astronomy. Mm. So the radio waves come in and they're able to see their trajectories, and then a computer is the focusing lens that takes those trajectories and turns them into a single image.
That's now, is the point awesome. Of doing that, because I mean, we've found black holes before. They're not hard to, I mean, they're not easy to find, but they're not impossible to find elsewhere, but we haven't found the one closest to us in the center of our galaxy.
Mm. They basically want to just be able to image it better because there's a lot of light around black holes, which sounds counterintuitive, but because there's so much radiation being poured off by material falling into it, it's hard to actually see the black hole itself. And so a radio telescope is better at doing that, but there's so much gas and crap in between us and the black hole, so you need a higher resolution. And so we've been able to detect that it's probably a black hole there, but we want to be able to essentially see it with radio waves.
Yeah, I guess that's good. I mean, I don't know. Event Horizon is a word that worries me because I've seen that movie and it scared the crap out of me. So I'm sure that they could have had a better name is all I'm saying. They could have just dug around a little bit, found something a little less referential.
Scott, think of it this way. We think it's a black hole.
Yeah.
That's what we're gonna name Blackie McHole. No, never mind. I think what you're worried about, Scott, is that we'll think we're looking at a black hole, and then when we actually get the image back, it'll be a hamster.
Yeah, it'll be a hamster, and nobody wants that. That's all I'm saying. But I will say this: everybody wants good articles, and because of you, the fine listeners of this show, you provided a ton this week, Tom. Who do we thank this week for all the great submissions?
Well, this week, Mega Zeus, Thor, The Max, Gatekeeper, Captain Kipper, and I Am Sci-Fi all submitted awesome stories, as did many other people. Keep them coming and get in there and vote, folks. Currentgeek.reddit.com.
Now, I mentioned at the top of the show that Abby is an award-winning host of an award-winning podcast called Diary of a Trans Woman and has all kinds of great stuff happening. I would like to give you, Abby, a chance to talk about some of that stuff right now in the middle of the show. We like to give our guests a chance to talk about their projects and what they're up to. So tell us a little bit about, more about yours and what you have going on.
So I have, amidst doing my day job and having an actual life, I've been trying to work very hard in promoting or bringing more to the center stage transgender and LGBT issues. The podcast that I do talks mainly about transgender issues. We pick a couple of news stories for the week, whatever's most prevalent, trying not to be as much of a downer, but unfortunately, that's the way that transgender news goes generally. It's obviously a lot of it is a diary portion talking about basically just how my mind works. It was originally made to be a podcast for people who were straight and or cisgendered, wanting to learn more about transgender culture and how that worked. It's turned into forming a bit of a community. of trans people looking for answers, and it's been great.
That's awesome.
We've been working, I've been doing stuff locally here, working to facilitate groups and events going on in the Detroit, Ann Arbor area to just promote acceptance and give people safe spaces, because a lot of people don't have that. And we're also talking a lot about exploring new medical opportunities. I'm working with one of the best trans doctors in the country to develop new and more effective, safer treatments for hormone replacement.
Oh, that's awesome. So here's the question I've been wanting to ask you for a long time. You and I had a really great conversation at Nerdtacular 2015 out at the cigar bar thing that we do every year. And I was
a little bit drunk.
Yeah. And that's okay, because for whatever reason, it was just a very open, awesome conversation. I just feel like I learned so much more about you and where you were coming from. And I wonder if the process of this show that you've created and the community that's sort of burgeoning around it, has that helped you on your own personal path, maybe in ways you didn't expect?
Oh yeah. I'm taking a much different perspective of it. Do you remember, was that conversation we had, was that 3 years ago or 2 years?
2015. Ago? So I guess 2 years ago. Yeah. 2 years ago.
Okay. I can't remember, but regardless, when I came out, Nerdtacular was the first place I came out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was across the country with people I might not see again, and if it wasn't handled, but it went great. And having that group of people, not necessarily a following, a community, like with Diamond Club and Frog Pants, we're much more of a community. Having that was just such a big boost for me as far as my confidence went. And now I get to be a person that hopefully provides the same thing to others. And so it has definitely helped me. It's worked almost as good as therapy has, being able to sit and talk in front of a microphone. However, the focus and the reason that I try and do it is because there's a lot of people out there who just don't have anyone in their life who has any idea what they're going through and has no reason to try and relate to them and support them.
Well, it's an awesome project. I love it. And I'm so glad that you're doing it. Tell people where they can find it so they can find it easily and quickly.
DOATW.com is where all the shows are being hosted right now. They were for a while on Inked Geek Studios with Nate Ward, but we've gone independent. And I think some of the older episodes are hosted over there at Inked Geek still, but DOATW.com is where you want to go.
All right, go check it out.
I have to say, yeah, that year at Nerdtacular, you were walking around with a presence, mm-hmm, and it was just such a cool thing to see you doing that, which was incredibly brave.
Yeah.
Coming out at a place like Nerdtacular, which, if people aren't thinking about this, you're surrounded by mostly guys, big, mm-hmm, sweaty, nerdy guys. Mm-hmm. And yet there was nothing but love in the room.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that was, I mean, the first day and a half or so, I wasn't going to do it. And then just realized, you know what? If this goes poorly, I don't have to see these people ever again. Yeah. I can go back across the country and, yep, hide away in my hole and try and figure something else out. But there was just, I mean, Tom, you say there's a presence with me walking around doing that, but whenever this community gets together, there's a presence just around everyone.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you were channeling that presence, but it was there.
It was,
yeah,
also, it was a great confirmation of something that I had suspected, but had never really had proven out, which was, That it would be a safe place for you and, yeah, someone like you, that it wouldn't be the wrong reaction, that it wouldn't be a bunch of people acting funny after or whatever. And that was such a great confirmation for me as somebody who's got, you know, the large responsibility of sort of running the thing and not really knowing. I don't know. How do I know? I have no idea. I'm just trying to make the thing go. And I just wasn't sure. And I always knew that the heart of the community was strong and that the acceptance there was great, but it was such a great confirmation of that. So it's weird. It's like, I've heard you many times thank that environment for that opportunity, but I feel like the environment has some thanks to give you for giving it a chance to prove itself. And that really mattered to me. So anyway,
if I hadn't come out and given it the chance to prove itself, it would still be awesome. It just wouldn't have proven itself. That doesn't mean it's not awesome. So,
right. Yeah.
No, of course. But just, I mean, I'm a big fan of subverting stereotypes,
yeah,
and that, you know, you coming out in the middle of Utah in a nerd convention at a ski resort.
It took a 48-hour train ride across the country to get there.
Yeah. There's just so many awesome things about that story.
It was huge. It was huge. So congratulations again on that and your success with the podcast. And people do check it out, okay? We'll talk more about it at the end of the show. Of course, make sure people have that address fresh in their minds. Before we get to the pop quiz, which is always a good time, we're going to talk real quick about the way we help this show succeed. And the way we do that is through frogpants.cratejoy.com. It's a fun way that Tom and I came up with to help the show survive. And we when we thought about this at the time, we thought, well, we could do like everybody else. We could have yet another Patreon, or we could have yet another big advertising venue for something. But instead, we said, why don't we try something a little different? So we created these Crate Joys. You get them every month, and inside is artwork and custom stuff from us. Tom's showing some of it now. Hold on, pulling his thing up. Oop, there it is. Look at that. He's got a calendar. He's got prints. Look at that. Membership cards. People at home can't see this. You'd love this. USB chargers. There's a, I forget what that is you're holding. What's that one with the, our mic?
Is that like a business card case?
Oh, yeah. Business card case, right. It's like a metal wallet. USB charger, all kinds of cool stuff. Prints, look at that. Full-size 9x12 prints. Signed by artists, signed by writers. Tom sometimes writes. I sometimes do the art. Sometimes our guests do it. Tom just took a fake slurp out of a fake shot glass.
That was empty.
Huh? Or it was a real shot glass, but there was nothing in it.
The real shot glass. Yeah. There was nothing in it.
It's got a logo on it. But anyway, all kinds of cool stuff can be found at frogpants.cratejoy.com. You can sign up today, learn more. Everything you need's right there. Frogpants.cratejoy.com. And huge thanks to everybody who currently helps us do that as it is. And a quick mention of our friends over at Audible. Big, big thanks to Audible for supporting the podcast today. They're unmatched in their selection of audiobooks, original shows, news, comedy, and more. They're just so great to listen to when you're, I don't know, driving, commuting, stuck in traffic, on the subway, the bus, jogging, working out, the gym, doing errands, shopping, whatever. For our audience, Audible's offering a free audiobook. That's right, a free audiobook from Audible with a 30-day free trial. And if you want to listen to it, Audible has it. Just go to audible.com/currentgeek and browse the unmatched selection of audio content. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. So check them out. That's audible.com/currentgeek and get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial today. It's time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, time for the pop quiz. The pop quiz is fun. The pop quiz is interesting. And the way the pop quiz works is this. Oh, it's not working at all. Hold on. There we go. Why it does that every time. When you get an answer right, Abby, you're going to hear this. When you get it wrong, you'll hear this. And it's in an area of your expertise, at least I believe so. And I'm trying to remember if I put it in the same place because it's been so long since we had to cancel that it may have moved. So hold on here. Here we go. Pop quiz. All right, I found it.
Can't find it. I'll just take 100% on everything.
Well, it's the easy thing to do. Oh, here we go. I found it. It is the Wheel of Time series trivia. You're a big fan, right?
Love it.
Okay.
Absolutely love it.
Have you read all the books?
When I submitted that I wanted this to be my topic,
yeah.
I was 3 chapters from the end of the last book.
Oh, my.
So now I'm all the way through the Mistborn series, like a couple chapters away, so I'm hoping I don't get everything muddled up.
Total side thing. Do you feel like they lived up? The books that weren't written by the author, do you feel like they lived up to your expectations?
There were very, very subtle hints. I could definitely tell the difference in very specific, tiny little points.
Mm-hmm.
I think it improved it a little bit.
Oh, wow. Well, Sanderson.
Robert Jordan's notes with Brandon Sanderson's detailing, I think it's great. I think it's beautiful.
Utah connection. We had
two minds behind it, right?
Yeah. Plus, Sanderson lives out here by me, so I have some pride in him. I want him to succeed. Not like I need him to. I mean, not like he needs me. He's succeeding just fine without me. Anyway, we tried to get him to Nerdtacular the year you came out. That would have been cool.
What?
Yeah. We tried. He was busy, had something. Maybe we'll get him again this year. Who knows? We'll see what we can do. Anyway. Oh, that was weird. Something just fell. Oh, that was my phone. Everything's fine. Hey, here's your questions. Question number one. Oh, and Tom, you ready to keep score? You're all good over there?
I sure am.
All right, sounds good. First question is this. What year was the first Wheel of Time book published?
Before I was born.
That is correct. Do you have an exact date?
Oh.
Well, you know what? It can be a year. It doesn't have to be a day.
You've got a point for getting the question correct. It's just bonus round now.
85?
You are... Incorrect. It was 1990. However, Tom says you get a point. So well done.
So 5 years off. So find out half off.
Before
so.
I was born.
Well, what year were you born?
1990.
Oh, same year. Okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh! You just made Tom
probably in the print run before you were born. So.
Tom and I were fresh college children then. That's weird.
Yeah, I was working at WPGU in college.
I was just trying to make it work. Taking art classes, drawing naked people for the first time. That was a good time.
Yeah.
Next question. What was the name of the prequel novel set 20 years before the first novel?
A New Spring.
You are correct. That must have been one of the...
bonus.
Yeah, well done. Next up, what is the name of the first book in the series?
The Eye of the World.
Killing it. Just killing it. This is great. Tom, anything you want to, you're let me know if anything bonus happens.
I won't be shy. All right.
What game company released the Wheel of Time role-playing game in 2001?
Oh, I actually had a copy of this. Not Wizards of the Coast. I don't know.
The answer is Wizards of the Coast, turns out.
Really?
Yeah.
So you get a half point for saying the correct answer in your answer.
Okay.
All right. It's not bad. Half is good. Half is better than none.
Oh, yeah, because it was a direct D&D. It was still in that.
It was like reskinned, right? Same rule set, though.
Reskinned, yeah.
They were doing a lot of that stuff back then. Final question. Excluding the prequel novel, how many novels are there in the Wheel of Time series?
14.
Oh, my gosh. The speed bonus, Tom, is off the charts today.
Yep, those absolutely. Half point speed bonus there, too.
Those are his questions. Did you read all of the stuff, all the books, all the Wheel of Time books?
Oh, man. This is one of the things that Veronica and I have to fight all the time is we read Eye of the World for Sword and Laser.
Yeah.
And then neither one of us moved on. And it's not because we don't like Brandon Sanderson. It's because we run a book club podcast where we have to read one and in Veronica's case, two books a month. So
all right.
I'll get there. I promise.
It took me years to get through the series.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's huge, right?
She's a hero. You're a hero to me. I can't imagine reading all these books. And I have the heart. I think I'd be like Tom and Veronica. I would probably have bailed for some reason.
Now I have the same thing with Terry Brooks. All the Terry Brooks fans where I could say before, like, oh, I haven't got around to it. Now I've read Sword of Shannara because we read it for Sword and Laser. But I haven't moved on. And that's another huge series out there as well. So
well,
it was audiobooks.
Oh, okay. Well, it's all right. That's how Tom gets a lot of his booking.
Yeah, man. That's the only way I could survive.
I own the hardcover books. They look sexy as hell up on a bookshelf. But
actually, this brings I got a quick question, Tom. I know they normally don't ask you questions during the quiz time. How many, if you had to percentage it out, and I'm sure you've said this somewhere else probably on Sword and Laser, but what's the percentage of audio versus read for you?
These days it's 90% audio.
Audiobooks, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Actually, lately I've read a few more ebooks than usual. I almost never read print anymore. And it's mostly audio.
It's all ebooks for me these days because I find myself, my mind wanders too much when I'm doing audiobooks. And I thought it would be the other way. I thought it would be mind wander while I read, but it's the opposite. Even if it's really well read, amazing voice, all that stuff, I just get lost. So I've had to stick to ebooks more.
There's certain things I can't do. I don't know about you, Abby, but I can't like do anything that I have to think about when I'm listening to an audio. Mm.
No. I mean, I can have it on the background when I'm working. Mostly like I put myself through college doing delivery for a bunch of different restaurants. And now I'm working in downtown Detroit and I've got a 45-minute commute when the weather is good.
That's perfect book reading. Yeah, that's a perfect time to be doing it. Well, all right. We have results. How'd she do, Tom?
Yeah. With a final score out of 5 of 6, I'd say Abby did great.
I think let's think about the averages. Her score is it's got to be better than most people's on average. So we have no one here to compare you to.
Here's the thing, Scott. I know you're very competitive and you like to want to stack everybody up against everybody else.
I know.
Every scoring situation is so different. It's almost impossible to compare.
Yeah, that's true.
From one quiz to another.
That's a solid B, though.
Yeah, it's a good B. So. Sure. Yeah, it'll get
six
you.
Six out of five?
Yeah.
It's 110%.
Wait, you did 5 out of 6.
No, 6 out of 5. You had 5 questions, you got 6 points.
Yeah, because we're weird here. And also, but that's if you grade on the curve, I don't know what I'm saying. You're right. It's a good score no matter what. No matter what, you can walk down that aisle with a hat and tassel and feel good about it when you take the scroll from Tom Merritt one day. So well done. Congratulations. That's going to do it for that. I know what's next. It's called Forecast, and we love it.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
I say we love it because we do. It's a chance for us to predict the future, to talk about the way things might be in the future in technology, culture, or otherwise. And we're going to go all the way back to a prediction Abby made. Oh, you made this back when we canceled, so it's been a little while, but I think it's as cool today as it was then. Do you want to explain it for us? What's your prediction?
I actually don't have the thing in front of me, but...
Oh, you want me to read it for you?
No, we could read it.
Yeah, you have it.
That's, yeah, Tom, go ahead, okay, read it.
Better.
Abby wrote this February 16th, probably, like the night before the show that we didn't get to do until now. In the far-flung future, human augmentation will become a regular occurrence. It is assumed that these augmentations will work to enhance people's physical strengths as well as the other aspects of their lives. But will the physical changes that accompany these augmentations do anything to push the boundaries of what is socially acceptable for a man or a woman? A man opting for lower body strength augmentation may need to acquire a wider chassis or hips to enclose the enhancement. A woman who augments their upper body strength could need broader shoulders to house the augmentation. It is my prediction, Abby wrote, that as these augmentations begin to become more commonplace, you'll see a wide divergence from the physical gender expectations present today.
Interesting. So, Abby, if I... I'm thinking of all the utility here. So one of my problems is upper body strength. That is to say I have none. Okay. So I like the idea that if I knew my career was changing, let's say it changed because the world changed and now we're all required to be down at the dock hefting boxes or something. It would be really cool if the way I got there, especially as a guy in his 40s, who can't really, you know, be quite the gym rat he could have been before. It'd be nice if we could just go in and they'd say, all right, well, let's get you a new, you know, rack, for lack of a better term. And sent me on our way. Is that kind of the thinking? It would just sort of depend on your needs, yeah, your wants?
It is a very open-ended question. It might not necessarily be people getting augmentations that give them the aspects of the opposite gender as we know them today, but as time goes on and it becomes much more easier to augment your appearance, whether it be for a physical reason to augment yourself, just to change your appearance or for a certain function. Is that going to change the general idea of what a perfect man or a perfect woman is going to be?
Seems like, right? Like the perfect steak,
yeah,
is now dependent on more than just how well you cooked it or who cooked it or even more than where'd the cow come from. So much is genetically engineered. So much of what they eat is genetically engineered. In fact, wasn't it you, Tom? We were talking just the other day about bison burgers versus regular burgers. And the reason...
Oh, yeah, right.
The reason regular cow burgers, beef, is different is it's just we've got to a refined place in the process that includes a lot of different things.
It's not genetically engineering like a lot of people protest against. It's modifying the species over the years. We keep breeding the fatter cows because they're marbled and they taste better.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. But whereas with bison, there aren't as many. We don't really breed them for the food. And when we do eat them, they just seem more gamey and thicker and tougher and all those things.
But we're not going to eat the people, right?
No, we're not going to eat the people. We don't want to eat the people. Good. Yeah. They're made of people. But I really, this is a very interesting idea. So I had a dream once, and Abby, perfect guest for me to tell this to. I had a dream while on codeine during this illness, okay? Codeine is no good. I said on today on Twitter, it's wizard pee. It just makes you think of weird stuff and have strange dreams. So I had some wizard pee before bed.
Foul wizard pee.
and I had this dream in the middle of the night that I lived, and it seemed so real, like absolutely, absolutely was happening. Like not a dream where I knew it was weird. It just seemed right at the time. I was pregnant, and I was pregnant and having a baby because we had decided, I can't remember what the deal was, but we, Kim and I had decided to do it, and Kim no longer has a uterus for reasons. And
dream reasons.
Right, yeah. But we still wanted to be the parents, and in this dream, the way it worked out was I would take on the role of carrying the baby, and we were in a place where the technology was not only possible, but it was all very natural, like...
Yeah,
the implants.
Like, it's my turn.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah. They gave me the plumbing and the insides and the whatnot to need to be what I had to be, and to make the baby the way I needed to make it. And it was just great. It was like this dream. It went just great. And at the end of the dream, we had this beautiful baby, and everything was wonderful. And I woke up and went, "Oh my gosh, what the crap? What's going on, codeine?
What if that was normal, though? What if that was something that was just generally accepted?
And that's my point. Like, in the dream, it felt completely acceptable. Not only acceptable, but, like, awesome. Like, whoa, look what we can do and pull off. So, to answer your question, based partly on the fact that I just had a dream about this, if we get to a time where people aren't so hung up on stuff, it'd be awesome. Because then it's just going on, and then we're just innovating within that space. It's like a lot of things. It's like, actually, any human augmentation is so controversial. If you just want to put a chip in your head, that's enough for somebody to say, you're playing with laws of nature or with God or whatever the norm is that you're, you know.
Well, we haven't even gotten past the idea that taking certain medications is bad.
Right.
Whether it be birth control or, in my case, hormones.
Right.
There's plenty of people out there who think that's a terrible thing to do to your body.
Yeah. And so there's a lot to get over, but to answer your question, I'd love that. Like, that'd be great, because then it tends to trickle down. It's not that it has to start and end there, but other things become less, you know, stigmatized or whatever.
This is certainly less of a like solid prediction and more of a statement of like, I really can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
I would love to see what the social norms are 100 years from now.
Well, think about it. I mean, a lot of people forget and or weren't alive, but I can remember my grandparents kind of looking down at women who wore pants.
Yeah, I remember that, like, too.
Do they think they're men wearing pants? Like, how crazy is that? And that was 30, 40 years ago. That was not that long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can find other examples of, like, oh, men who wear earrings or having long hair and, like, all of these things that have now become pretty much normal. Like, nobody looks askance at women for wearing pants these days, right?
No.
At what point do some of these other things cross that same barrier where it was unthinkable at one point and now it's normal?
I just wish it wasn't such a slow grind because, you know, I hate how long this stuff takes. Like, I remember it was controversial in the 80s that my parents adopted 3 Korean children. And at the time it was, you know, me, my sister, and then we had these 3 very different looking than us Korean kids. And for us, it was normal. We grew up with it. It was nothing. But there were people all over the place that just sort of put their nose up to it and acted funny about it. And now, would you even think twice today about somebody who grew up with an Asian sibling? No, you wouldn't. Well, hopefully we can get there much quicker with other racial issues and now ethnic issues and things that seem to plague us today. But why the slow grind on this stuff? It just drives me crazy. It takes a whole generation to die out who've had their brain so hardwired in a certain way that we have to wait for that to happen before people can stop, whatever it is, complaining that video games are killing us all.
Generation. But yeah, changing a world is not an easy process.
Right.
And it's something that you can't do without, you can't steer the Titanic and turn it on a dime.
Yeah.
It'll sink that way. Or it's very interesting because there's no real way to kind of steer the idea that people have in their heads of what is right and wrong. There's no way to steer that in a direct way.
Yeah.
It's
gonna go in a certain direction and nobody has the ability to predict it. And
yeah, it's going to be annoying.
And it's funny how
go ahead.
Fast it feels it changes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can remember having conversations in the 90s in Austin with my friends about will gay marriage ever be accepted?
Mm-hmm.
Will pot ever be legal?
Mm-hmm.
And now we're living in a world where both of those are definitely, you know, the one more so than the other, but both of those are reality.
Yeah. The reality is still some, in many cases, very unaccepted realities, realities that people still rail against, but realities nonetheless. So there's progress, obviously.
Yeah. You talk about transgender culture too. I mean, I came out about I was slowly in the process of coming out before the whole Caitlyn Jenner craze that shoved the transgender icon into the middle of culture. And just the amount of change that's happened in those few years has been amazing. And there's certainly a hell of a lot further to go, but it does feel like a lot has happened.
Yeah.
But it also feels like there is a lot that has yet to change.
Yeah,
that's,
for sure.
You do get these bursts though, because sometimes the best way to deal with the sun is to stare into it. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you have to just, like, go
kids,
for it.
Don't take
no,
that
yeah,
later.
I don't want to. But even today, we're going to get emails from people going, yeah, this all makes sense, and we agree with you, and I wish, and I'm going to have some people email in and say, no, this is no good or whatever. That's the way it is. But man, progress is slow, but it's progress, and I'll take what we can get. And so
getting used to the idea, right, talking about it, and seeing it, and understanding that it's not a threat, whatever it is.
Yeah. So Abby, if I had one final question on this for you directly, it's this. Do you think that day will come where it's just not a big deal? We don't need advocacy. We don't need somebody building podcasts or doing community work or whatever, because it's just now part of life as much as it is that I need gas for my car or doctor says my ingrown toenail needs to come out. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a thing, and it's a life thing, and you talk, and only talking about it is just normal conversation like you do anything else in life. Do you think that day will come?
Well, I think that day is here, since we're able to sit down on a podcast and talk about that in a certain extent. As far as it being widespread to where the total populace thinks that way, I think that day will come, and I hope I'm wrong about it, but I think I'm not going to be alive when that happens. It's going to be a while from now.
It's going to take a little bit of time. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I knew you before you came out and after. And I think I may have even done it on the show today. I still will once in a while flub up a her and a him, and I'll mix them up.
You did.
Did I already? Did. I probably did. I do it all the time.
I wasn't going to derail the entire show. Right, and you know, and
listen, she knows me well. She knows me well enough to know that I'm just an idiot sometimes, really, is what that comes down to.
Who knows you well enough?
There's no... she. Did I say she? I think I said she, didn't I?
No.
Didn't I? So. Oh, I thought I said she. Didn't I, Tom? I thought I did.
This is why I don't derail the show for a little
bit. But this is my whole point. Scott notwithstanding... It's the intent I want to see change, right? I want to see hearts and minds and I don't know. This all sounds so Pollyanna-ish or whatever that word is that you describe this stuff. Yeah, or maybe I have too many stars in my eyes about what the future actually could do and what kind of change we could actually make. But you know, I mean it. I want that day to come.
And, what does this have to do with polyamory?
I don't know. Not polyamory. Pollyanna.
Just more love. That's all.
Pollyanna-ish. What's that thing where you say I'm being like Pollyanna, where you...
Pollyanna, where you think everything's just wonderful.
Yeah, where everything's just a shiny, bright future when really I'm not being realistic, but...
I've never heard that word before.
Oh.
Yeah,
not polyamory. I know what that is.
Well, because it's old... Was it a musical? Was it a musical?
Yeah, it was a Pollyanna or Pollyanna... It was a British TV
show.
Pollyanna
was a character who just always thought everything was rosy and positive. Put the most positive spin on everything.
So when somebody says our economy is perfect and never needs to change, and somebody say, "Well, that's a very Pollyanna attitude to have," and it's an old phrase. So look, you've learned something today.
I have too.
And if you start saying that's a very polyamorous attitude to have, it really start to confuse people.
I definitely did not say that. If I
hang around with plenty of people that already think that way, so.
Yeah.
Well, it's good stuff. There's your forecast. Hey, one final note. We got an email from a listener. We get these at currentgeek@gmail.com. This came to us from John, who says this. Hi, guys. I'd like to say I think this word canon is an ugly one. To throw out so many years of creative works expanding on the Star Wars universe is bantha poodoo. In the old days before digital, all we had were the books and the absence of movies to go see. To fill that void, many wonderful books fed our imaginations and helped us navigate the rabbit hole we so very badly wanted to see or understand. Hey, I get it. If you want to sling the new direction and strategy is to protect our new story arcs, unquote, which come to at the expense of what so many of us know to be true from the books. At the end of the day, Disney has proved through two movies it will be a good steward of the universe, and I'll be happier if they gleaned it from the books instead of just saying the stupid word canon. It's not canon. It's real. They wrote it, and nobody else was doing anything about it, including Lucas. Keep up the good work, John. Makes an interesting point.
I totally disagree.
You disagree? How come?
I disagree with John. I think it's justifiable what they did because they would have been so constrained in what they could have done with the movies otherwise. But at the same time, I 100% respect John's reasoning here. Like, he makes a really good case for why, like, hey, these things are real. Maybe we just need a different word. I don't know.
Mm. Well, I mean, Marvel has so many different universes. You've got Miles Morales in one universe and Peter Parker in the other universe. They're both real as real as comic book characters can be. Throwing out the canon doesn't make those stories any less real and impactful on your life.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that is, though, that we always want to have that connective tissue, though? Like, if you say things like, well, Grand Admiral Thrawn never existed, even though now he's back in the animated thing, but if you say that because you say all the books aren't canon, so no longer we should be considered
Mara
that way.
Jade, right? There's no Mara Jade in canon.
There you go. And she may show up again later because they have been cherry picking, right? They've been pulling things out that were good concepts, just not in the context of the stories. There's something in us, though, that wants this this linear thread. We want to be able to say, oh, these are all connected, and I know who Luke's kids are, and I know this because of such and such book, and those Timothy Zahn books told me everything I needed to know about what the Empire was doing with this, but now they're telling me none of that's true. Like, you can see why they're frustrated.
Yeah, I think what John's saying is people put a lot of hard work and emotion and investment in these universes, and it feels like they were just tossed out.
Yeah.
It's like a breakup. It's a sense of finality that this thing fell in love with is not going to continue anymore. That's one of the reasons why I loved Wheel of Time so much. There's 14 books and they're both 5,000 pages long, or all of them are 5,000 pages long. It's going to take me forever to get to the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so there's always going to be something that comes after it.
Yeah.
But a standalone book is just going to be front to back and that's it. And so when you throw the canon out, there's definitely this feeling of like, there's nothing that's going to come after this.
Right.
I don't get to see this character that I fell in love with that I relate to so much do anything else.
Yeah.
I love what you said about the alternative universes, though, Abby. I think that's the solution. It's weird because the movies sort of, at least the first three movies, if not six, exist in both realities, so to speak. But it does take that those legends and says, hey, these are their own universe and their own reality. And I guess the only thing to do would be to say, and we'll let people continue to make things in that universe.
I also
like that you used Marvel as the example, because Marvel's had a few reasons why they had to do what they did. One is for story reasons, or one is for how do we get these characters together reasons, or how do we make these movies simultaneously and have them come together as the Avengers or whatever. So they've got a lot to do in the MCU. So that's its universe and film. But Fox owns the rights to an entire bunch of heroes that even Marvel can't touch in their own universe. And they can't even call them mutants in their own universe, but Fox can. So it's like this whole separate thing, but we're all okay with it. I mean, we'd maybe rather they all were in the same universe, I suppose. But it just felt like somebody came into the Star Wars thing that was well enough alone, and they just went, and they move stuff around. I know that's how some people feel.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
this person saying that you should, like, don't call it canon. They can both be, because, I mean, what's canon? Is it the Fox or is it Disney?
Yeah.
There's no canon. So if you had it, I don't know.
Yeah.
As long as they don't spend a movie talking about how the two universes split off, that's fine. I don't want to see that.
Oh, yeah. We don't want
to see a whole movie just explaining. Yeah.
That's a really good point. We don't want that at all.
It happened when Emperor Palpatine's lightning bolt hit a transformer.
Exactly. And you know what that means. Anyway, John, thanks for the email. We appreciate it. CurrentGeek@gmail.com. Oh, Abby, I'm so glad we finally were able to get you on.
It's been great.
Great guest. We'll have you back for sure. And I'd love to know one more time where people can find your work. Where should they go?
DOATW.com. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at Abby Geek.
Nice.
ABBYGEK.
Always something good happening there. Tom Merritt, anything you'd like to mention before we go?
This may be too late for some people, or they may not live in Los Angeles, but on Saturday at Book Soup in West Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard, I'll be doing a meetup where I'll be talking about Pilot X, my new novel, and signing copies of it. So if you're around, come on out. And also, huge thanks to everybody who's bought Pilot X. I've had some people say some really nice things on Twitter. And if you haven't already, leave reviews, Amazon.com or in the iBookstore or wherever you find it. Reviews are super helpful with books and helping them be discovered by other people. So big thanks to everybody who's already done that.
That's awesome.
My copy's on the way. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Woo, I hope you like it.
Did anyone get back to you about whether they found the one you hid in that bookstore or not? Did you find out, Tom?
I haven't. No, I got to go check that.
I'm super curious about that. I don't know why. I'm obsessed with who got your book for whatever reason. I just love the idea that you hid it there. Or you didn't really hide it, but you signed the copy they had on the shelf.
No, I signed it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just curious who ended up with it. Anyway, do check that out, everybody. In the meantime, check us out at currentgeek.com. All our contact details are there. Big thanks again to Abby and everyone who listens. We'll be back next time with a brand new show. Until then, take care.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we leave politics and go back to the field of gaming to do a news update on two interesting cases for top brands in this field. We begin with Nintendo, which has returned to form with Breath of the Wild and the Switch console, receiving good reviews this week. But Nintendo has also returned to the courts, with a lawsuit filed against a company in Tokyo, which offers real-life Mario Kart rides, with Mario onesies, LED shoes, and mustaches. Yes, you heard that right. Real-life Mario Kart rides. Excuse me while I go purchase my tickets to Japan. Returning to the law, Maricar is accused of using Nintendo's IP and characters without permission. The closeness of the name and the use of the characters could indeed raise some trademark or copyright issues. While Maricar says that they had legal advice, that they were clear, it looks a bit like too much content copying without the small adjustments knockoffs usually make to be clear. Plus, Maricar sounds like it has no interest in going to court with the game giant. That means this fun folly will either disappear, change, or acquire a license. I would guess disappear. However, with Nintendo finally licensing some theme park areas in Osaka, Hollywood, and Orlando this year, perhaps you will still be able to live a Mario Kart fantasy without having to brave the streets of Tokyo. The other game giant with news in court is Riot Games, makers of top MOBA League of Legends. A court ruling granted Riot with an injunction and $10 million in damages against the makers of a software product called League Sharp. League Sharp was alleged to violate the DMCA because it circumvents the anti-cheating technology in the League of Legends game software. Even though League is free to play, League Sharp was a paid monthly service that allowed players to see hidden information and play automated bot versions of the game to build up swords and supplies to unlock game content faster than normal. That circumvention and botting harmed the game according to Riot, and League Sharp also hacked and released some confidential employee information from Riot. This is precisely the type of company and bad actors that video game companies like Riot and Blizzard often try to stop. By obtaining a huge judgment and injunction only 7 months after this lawsuit was filed in August, Riot has quickly protected the League of Legends game and its player base, and the courts have sent a strong message to other companies that want to try to profit off of or attack other big game titles. The bottom line is, profitable game giants will almost always act to protect their property and their players, and it usually works. We'll see if Nintendo and Riot Games can continue their hot streak in the court of public opinion as these games continue to develop and grow. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.